And our title tonight is A City Dies. And I have a feeling that this is going to be a tale of two cities, really. And I think the two cities involved are Jerusalem and Margate. Because I was talking to a BBC costume designer the other day. It's not something I do very often. In fact, I've never done it before. But we met on Euston Road. We were both taking our children to Regent's Park. And it was in between Euston Road. It was in between Euston Road and Regent's Park that she told me that she'd just dressed a production set in Margate. And she asked me a question, which didn't change my life, but it's an interesting one. She said to me, "Do you know how they dress in Margate?" And I said, "It's funny you should ask that, but well, no, I don't actually. I don't really know how they dress in Margate." And she said some very deep words. She said, "In Margate, they all wear shell suits." Well, I don't know if you know what a shell suit is, but if you don't, a shell suit is, it's like a, I don't know how to describe it, I was somebody else, it's like a sort of tracksuit. But it's thin nylon-y material, and it's a bit shiny, and quite often it's sort of day glow. It's the sort of thing you see a lot of people are trying to create an impression, you know, when they're skiing. It's all sort of day glow colours and stuff. And shell suits are generally worn by slightly ageing swingers. who are sort of pretending... They're trying to pretend that they're fit. And and as soon as this woman said that, that in Margate they all wear shell suits, I was thinking, 6th century Jerusalem and 20th century Margate aren't so different. Well, we'll come back to that. Perhaps next year. But I'd like to, first of all, I'd just like to report on a scientific experiment. And I'd like to ask you a question, because you are the jury here. And the question is this: do you think the story I'm about to tell has a happy ending? I'll tell it to you and you can decide. So there is a scientist and he discovers an acorn. He'd never seen an acorn before in his life. He'd never seen an acorn. You can just imagine it sitting here on the palm of my hand, still acorn. And he observed it for a long time. And then he saw something terrible happening before his very eyes. He saw something terrible. Because do you know what happened to the acorn? It cracked open. And it died. Well, it's tragic. Of course it was. How could he improve on this acorn so it would live longer? Because surely long life is the most important thing in the world. And so with chemical analysis of the material inside the acorn, he isolated the substance that controlled the condition of the shell. And lo and behold, he's now created an acorn that never cracks. It just sits there. It never, ever cracks. Wonderful. So what do you reckon? Do you reckon that's a happy ending? I think we'll come back to that as well. So here we are. Here we are in a reading from Lamentations. And I think the book of Lamentations is still read, I think, in synagogues on the anniversary of the fall of Jerusalem in 586 BC. Because that's what gave rise to this book. That's the historical setting. The tragedy described here is the destruction of Jerusalem in 586 BC. And it's a complete physical and emotional disaster for the Jewish people, and the intensity of which is made very clear in the writing. Because it's as passionate writing about suffering as you'll find anywhere in the Bible. It's not a book about the mind, really. It's a book all from the heart. It's a book that you feel. In many ways, it's saying the same thing again and again and again. And perhaps that's what you thought when you were listening to it. But that's what we do when we feel something very badly. We just come back to it again and again and again. It's a book from the gut. So Lamentations is not a sort of Horlicks and a digestive biscuit sort of piece of writing at the end of a day. It's not the quiet, encouraging thought you're looking for before you turn out your light. You won't find it in the front of the Gideon Bible, is recommended to look at if you're feeling a bit down. It's a screaming sort of book of misery and despair. And so if you've ever screamed in misery and despair, then perhaps you'll be glad, strangely, because here's somebody else doing the same as you do. And in this particular case, it's the Israelites who are doing it. And they're saying, God, you've done just what you said you'd do. And it's hurting. It's hurting beyond words. It's torture. A city dies. And in one sense, it's hard to find an encouraging word. But actually, that's not quite true, because I don't know if you noticed. But one of the things that we're looking at in Lamentations is the death of something rather repulsive. Have you noticed that? We're actually looking at the death of something rather repulsive, rather ugly. Because what we're looking at here is the end of a particular form of idolatry. So perhaps it's not all bad. It's very, very painful, but perhaps it's not all bad. Let's see. I mean, when people mention idolatry to me, I don't know what you think of, but I do tend to think of people bowing down. It's like, you know, old pictures of the old Bibles I used to have, people bowing down to sort of strange metal images. But of course, you know, I think, you know, most idolatry has got nothing to do with that. Because most idolatry has nothing to do with metal images, but rather it's to do with mental images. And that's where most of the idolatry goes on. And the particular mental image which the people of Jerusalem idolized was this: we're safe. We're safe. We're untouchable. We're Zion. We're Yahweh's, God's chosen people. We're okay. And if you don't believe me, look at the unconditional promises made to David and his dynasty. What or who can touch us? Of what need we be afraid? Marvellous religious rhetoric. And there were plenty of phony prophets to encourage this view, as we see in verse 14. You're safe. And so God's warnings, mainly through Jeremiah, were ignored as this idolatry took hold, this mental image. The mental image that we're fine. We're God's. We're okay. We're safe. Thus, a city died. It died. Jerusalem, as they'd known it, was finished. It was invaded and ruled now by foreigners. A city died. And with it, an idol or illusion, which the people of Jerusalem had been worshipping for some time now. Though, of course, if you asked them, they wouldn't have called it idol worship, no. They wouldn't have called it illusion, certainly not. They'd have called it good, honest, orthodox faith in God. Now, that's only worth mentioning, because actually we're all into idols, aren't we? Idolatry is second nature to us. Well, it is to me anyway. I used to stand in front of a mirror, and I used to believe that I was a world famous rock singer. I did. Now, I don't do that any longer. I've grown up. I now stand in front of the mirror and imagine myself being a world-famous clergyman. I don't know if that's progress or not. I don't think it probably is. But there's me in front of the mirror in the bathroom. Perhaps you've been there too. Not my bathroom, but your own. And I'm imagining myself as this, you know, this world-famous clergyman. And what that idol is doing for me is this. It's protecting me against things that I'm afraid of. It's a substitute for real trust in God now. It's some vague, wishy-washy projection that helps me to avoid facing myself. And somehow this idol of mine, this illusion, played out pathetically in the bathroom. It seems safe somehow. It seems safe. Because if I were genuinely to trust in God, I'd open myself to all sorts of things inside me which I really don't want to face. So idols are very seductive, very attractive, because they have the appearance of safety. We could name some other idols. Let's out some idols. Why not? I know a Christian woman who has made an idol out of her daughter getting to university. She's a very good Christian woman. But she worships that idol. She does. And you're thinking, well, that's a bit pathetic, isn't it? Yes, but you see, it makes her feel secure. It makes her feel successful that here is her daughter, fruit of her loins, right out there, university. My daughter at university. And she bows to that idol day and night. She bows to God as well, but there's always time for a bit of bowing elsewhere. I know someone else. Listen, you might think this is a bit strange. I know somebody who worships the idea that they're placid, that they're easygoing, that they're fairly laid back. I think they worship that mental image of themselves, that idol, that illusion. Because they're actually afraid to admit of all the anger underneath. Much safer to worship that little illusion. I'm placid. I'm Mr. Easygoing. And he bows to that. He's a Christian too. He bows to that night and day. Oh, he bows to God as well, but there's plenty of time elsewhere. I know someone else who thinks they're virtuous. Does that sound strange? Or aren't we meant to think we're virtuous, perhaps? I think they do that. They think they're virtuous, and I think they worship that idea. I think they're rather impressed with the idea that they're virtuous. And so they hold on to that mental image, that illusion, that idol. And they bow to it. Because if they don't, if they leave it, if they let go of it, they'll have to resolve all their unresolved guilt. So many illusions. We live by so many illusions, and we haven't even reached Margate yet. Margate. We could go there now, in fact. Let's go to Margate. Remember what the costume designer said? In Margate, they all wear shell suits. That means that in Margate, I've got nothing against Margate. I went for my honeymoon very near there, so it's no... I'm not running down Margate, it's a very nice place. But, you know, in Margate there are some people who actually have a problem, obviously, about getting old. There's a bit of illusion going on here, must be. A bit of idol worship. Obviously there are a good number of ageing swingers in Margate who are still trying to convince themselves and the world that, you know, that they're contenders for a pentathlete place, you know, in the next Olympic Games or something. I mean, funny enough, until I met this woman, I was thinking of buying a Shell suit. But, you know, I'm not... not now. But, see, what we're dealing with, in all these examples, as in Jerusalem, are various forms of idolatry. Various mental images, idols, illusions, which normal people, like the Israelites, like you and like me, cling on to. And we cling on to them, we cling on to these idols, because they appear to protect us from the things we're frightened of. They're a substitute for trusting in God. You shall now have no other God but me. These idols, they seem safer. For to trust in God genuinely would be to open ourselves to elements inside us that we're afraid of. Who wants to open a can of worms? And so it was in Jerusalem before the fall. "You're not safe, Jerusalem," said Jeremiah. "There's trouble around the corner unless you act." And Jerusalem said, "Oh, no, we are safe. We are. There was Jerusalem in front of the bathroom mirror. We are safe. We are. God's with us. We're sure of that. So please don't disturb our peace. Thank you." And so a city dies. An illusion dies. As all illusions must. And that, of course, is what judgment is, isn't it? That's what judgment is. We're right to be afraid of judgment. We're right to be afraid of judgment because judgment is the great unmasking. It's the great shattering of illusions, and it hurts. And probably you've felt it hurt already in your life. Because judgment and mercy walk hand in hand in the Christian life. And if you haven't felt it, but want to get a glimpse of how it does feel, then read Lamentations. Or rather, don't read Lamentations, feel Lamentations. So in a way, and you'll probably say, "Oh, that's a bit nasty, Simon." In a way, do you know what I'm saying? I'm hoping that my dear Christian woman, I'm hoping that her daughter doesn't get to university. Out of spite? No, not out of spite. But perhaps in the ensuing crisis, she can give up the idol worship and begin to trust in God. And let's hope, and this, again, you think, "Oh, this is too nasty," but let's hope that our placid friend publicly loses his rag. Mr. Laid Back, Mr. Easygoing, really loses his rag in public. So that out of that crisis, out of that great unmasking of the illusion, he can give up the idol and face himself as he really is. And I wish the same for our virtuous person and the shell-suited residents of Margate. I wish for judgment. I wish for shattering, for unmasking. And before I can wish it for them, it goes without saying that I have to wish it first for myself. Just as God ultimately had to wish it for Jerusalem. After all, there was no other way. There was no other way. And so their Jerusalem is safe theology, which was false, which was phony, was breached not by fine sermons, because Jeremiah gave many fine sermons, but it was breached by the hard facts of life, by Nebuchadnezzar's battering rams. Crash, thud, brutal, total crisis, pain, collapse, civil disorder. Ah! But also, of course, totally hopeful. Totally hopeful. Because at last, everyone concerned everyone concerned, the people here in Lamentations, you, me, at last we can all get in touch with reality again. That which we most feared. And we can make a wonderful and totally brilliant discovery. God is waiting to meet us there. You mean if I give up my illusion, he's waiting to meet me there? Yes, he is. He's not. He is. But I'm terrified of that reality. I know you're terrified, but God isn't. He's waiting there. And you think, my goodness, people talk about Christianity being good news. It's true. It is good news. Do you remember our acorn preserver? Here we are, got the acorn again here. Did you think it was a happy ending? I mean, I don't want to sound like a teacher or anything and ask sort of obvious questions. I don't want to be sort of too directive or anything. But if you thought it was a happy ending, you're wrong. I'm sorry about that, but you are wrong. It's not a happy ending. It was a terrible ending. You see, our acorn preserver, he thought he was about life. If you'd asked him, he said, yes, I'm about life. I want to preserve the life of that acorn, that very beautiful acorn. It's a lovely piece of work, that acorn. He thought he was about life, but he wasn't. In fact, he was about death. He was looking at a beautiful acorn, but a dead one. And it's the same with our idols, and it's the same with the illusions that we cling on to. We think they're about life, so we cling on to them. We preserve them. There's me persisting in front of the mirror in the bathroom. But actually, although I think it's about life, it's about death. Because it's stopping me from trusting completely in God now. A city dies. A city dies. Well, thank God for that, because I think it needed to. So we're done. We're done. But the climax of this service, obviously, is still to come. It'll be the drama that's played out down here in the bread and the wine. And perhaps our New Testament reading will just help us to lead us there. I don't know if you remember, but it was when Jesus was talking about that he was going to have to go to Jerusalem and die. And Peter said, oh no, you won't. And Jesus rather rudely said, get behind me, Satan. See, Peter had to give up an illusion. He had an illusion about Jesus. I don't know what he thought he was. I don't know, some miracle, great miracle worker, healer, wonder teacher, good bloke. But there was an illusion there that he had to give up, because actually that wasn't all Jesus was. Jesus was much more than that. And so Peter had to face the shame of the other disciples as he got linked in with Satan. Get behind me, Satan. Jesus deals very savagely with that illusion of Peter's. And he says, no, you've got to accept that actually I'm going to die a very offensive death. Please accept that. Give up your other illusions. Just please accept that I'm going to die an offensive death. And so tonight, we who are as riddled with illusions as the Israelites and as Peter, we come tonight and we drink the bread and the wine that remind us of this offensive death. And in doing so, how about using it like this? How about accepting the bread and the wine as strength to face the deaths that you have to face in your life? And some of those will be small deaths. Some of those will be little illusions that you have to give up. Some of those will be big, painful illusions that you have to give up. And of course, there is the ultimate physical death as well. How about drinking the wine and eating the bread and asking for strength? The strength that you need to give up the illusions and the idols that you cling to. For if you are a Christian, you of all people shouldn't really need reminding that beyond death is something very, very different. Beyond death, whether it's a small death or a big death, beyond death is something called life. Because beyond death is an unimaginably beautiful experience of love. An unimaginably beautiful experience of love that we feebly describe in the word God. A city dies. Long live the city.